You've probably heard about the term nurses eating their young. This refers to situations where there is hostility amongst nurses or other nursing staff at work, particularly involving newer nurses. Sadly, bullying has been historically accepted as a form of initiation, whether consciously or without intent. With hospitals around the country onboarding a lot of new nurses, it is of great importance to refocus on this area to retain our nurses and build a healthy work environment. Our guest today talks about how to address lateral violence using the tools of crucial conversations. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Insightful Nurse Leader. This is a podcast by nurse leaders for nurse leaders. This show is focused on assisting leaders become effective managers and change facilitators. I'm your host, Miles Perilla. Join me every week as I speak with fellow nurse leaders, share insights, lessons learned, and practical advice. So, whether you're a seasoned frontline leader, a budding charge nurse, an experienced manager, or executive, you don't want to miss this. Our guest today is a clinical education specialist in the emergency department at Overlake Medical Center in Bellevue, Washington. She has been in this role in over 5 years. Her foci are onboarding of all new hires, including new graduate nurses, point of care device training. She also championed the wireless ECG patch discharge program, which she represented at the Heart Rhythm Society conference in Boston, Massachusetts this year. Additionally, she is a trainer, planner, implementer of initiatives and projects working alongside the department manager, supervisor, and providers in and out of the emergency department. She represents the department in house-wide committees including CAUTI, CLABSI, professional development, product evaluation, safety, and sepsis. Outside of her official work, she served in the Emergency Nursing Conference Education Planning on the national level for ENA or Emergency Nurses Association. In the state level for ENA, she will serve as president in the Washington State Council for 2022. She represents Overlake Hospital in the Pacific Northwest Sepsis Conference, University of Washington's Continuous Nursing Education Immediate Response. She was a clinical instructor at Loma Linda University in California and practiced nursing in the Philippines in the states of Washington and California. She has been a nurse for 25 years, with 20 years as an emergency nursing staff, preceptor, charge nurse, mobile intensive care nurse, and worked at trauma centers from level 1 to level 2 and 3 adult trauma designations. She has been a TNCC instructor for 5 years and earned TNCC course director this year, 2021. As a TNCC instructor, she provides best practice recommendations from TNCC, from the Hospital Internal Trauma Committee, and resources from the American College of Surgeons Committee on Trauma. She earned her Bachelor's of Science in Nursing degree in 1996 from Makati Medical Center in the Philippines and her Master's of Nursing Path in Education in 2015 from the University of Washington in Bothell, Washington. Marie Yabo, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miles. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Today's topic is all about crucial conversations. So can you share with us how is a crucial conversation different from any other conversation?
So crucial conversations is one of those day-to-day information that we're going to be seeing. How different is it from your day-to-day encounters is that these crucial conversations are challenges in communication, usually happens in the workplace. Discussion between two or more people where there's opposing opinions, strong emotions, and high stakes.
Mm-hmm. And what is the significance of learning crucial conversations to the nursing profession and in healthcare overall?
These types of crucial conversations create like a workplace relationship impact between mm-hmm. colleagues, peer-to-peer, peer-to-leader, leader-to-peer, and of course, all the other levels of leadership. So these types of conversations mostly become negative, affects the safety of delivery of care in some form or another. Mm-hmm. And we'll hear that in one of the examples that I will share in a little bit.
So from a safety standpoint, You know, multiple literature out there in nursing or in healthcare in general points out that communication is typically the main cause of errors.
That is correct. And as being part of some process, cost analysis processes, one of the holes in the Swiss cheese, as they would always say, is that communication, whether it's communication is incomplete, inaccurate, no one spoke up, or it's he or she said this, or it's almost really like pointing fingers. One, because sometimes this communications, because of the strong emotions, we have a tendency to avoid because you don't want to have that direct conversation. You don't want to create animosity with the person you are having this argument with or this opposing opinions. But yes, it does affect just the quality of care that sometimes you need to inform the others about providing accurate information.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. When I think about crucial conversations, I think about a confrontation in that regard. And having worked in the ED, there are a lot of high emotions involved, typically, whether from patients, from family members, or fellow peers at work. Have you seen this at play? And could you share more about how crucial conversations play a crucial role in these confrontations?
So what I want to share is really an example of, well, a snippet of what I will be discussing at the UW CNE's Immediate Response Conference. So for example, let's say you have a new hire and this new hire felt intimidated by the team because the team perceives this new hire as being very slow. But at the same time, this new hire may or may not know that they are slow. So then the team decided to give the new hire the next patient and let the new hire draw on a bit. So this story could go in many different ways, but what they are not seeing here is, does the new hire know that information? And has this new hire been given any tips or strategies how to be more efficient in any of their moves? So this becomes then what I would say is to the team who are letting the new hire drown is, we have to start talking about giving feedback in a positive manner. Make it safe how to talk about almost anything. In the book Crucial Conversations by Kerry Patterson, Joseph Grinney, Ron McMillan, and Al Switzer, this is their second edition, they share that to make it safe to talk about almost anything, you want to step out, make it safe, and then step back in. What I mean by that is step out. You step out of the conversation. Don't get stuck in what's being said. So what's being said in this argument was, the new hire was too slow. The new hire really know that they were they given feedback about this. And you want to establish the reason why you are having that conversation. What do you really want out of this conversation? So, well, we want better performance by the new hire. And how are we going to do that? You want to share techniques to work efficiently, when and which tasks to delegate. And then step back into that conversation by talking about the problem. Do not avoid the dialogue or do not walk away from it, because you really want to face this dialogue head on. Because in somewhere down the road, this new hire will feel this animosity and may not feel right or may not feel that the other team are approachable to ask for any help from, that this new hire may not ask for any help and their patient may be in dire need of additional help. So we have to really face this one and assist the team to have this dialogue.
So as you mentioned that, I recall this term, eat their young. And, you know, in my experience in nursing leadership, I've heard this term even when I was before a nurse leader. And, you know, what's interesting is even now with a lot of turmoil, so to speak, with healthcare in general, I think that it has been more pronounced. What I talk about is lateral violence, bullying and such. And you know, it ties up a lot with safety and quality of care and retention in that regard. Also, you talked about creating a safe environment to be authentic. And from a nursing leadership standpoint, really that's the job of a nurse leader to create an environment where everyone can be their authentic self. So in that regard, what are your thoughts in the nurse leader's responsibility in creating that environment?
That's a good segue into this next tips, actually, from the book. So they say, why do we talk in the first place? Well, we want to really approach the entertaining feedback, negative or not, mm-hmm. but in a way that it doesn't become defensive. So you want to go into the conversation with a mutual purpose. They call this in the book as the entrance condition. So you're working toward a common outcome, a goal, an interest, or a value. So in this example, the new hire is really, the goal here is to get a better performance from the new hire, and at the same time, allowing the team to give feedback, back and forth feedback, or a two-way feedback with this new hire. So you want to say the purpose, you want to establish that trust, you want to avoid the perception that you are there to harm them, or you want to avoid the perception that you are there for a malicious intent. Secondly, in this mutual purpose, you want to establish that mutual respect. So mutual respect is at risk. So there's this red flags that you might see, because debate will happen, defensiveness will come in, accusations may come in, and then hidden agenda may come in. So that's why we say, as part of this mutual purpose and entrance condition, you want to say that purpose, establish that trust. And then they added more that really to get this conversation started, they have this term, start with the heart questions. Mm-hmm. What do I want for me? What do I want for others? And what do I want for this working relationship? So in this example, so what do I want for me is to get to know the new hire. And then for the working relationship, establish that trust, what and who to delegate tasks to.
What about in situations where, in your example, both parties are willing and able to resolve or to come into a path to resolution? What about in situations where it's one-sided, where there seems to be some passive aggressiveness, where one party is doing the accusation and the other is intimidated to a point where they're retreating and, you know, not engaging in anything like that?
So in the previous items I was mentioning, there was that something is at risk, that mutual respect, because we said once feedback is opened up, the other person may or may not be receptive to accepting that feedback, especially when it's negative. And then they get into this defensive mode, and then the disrespect comes in. So then in this book, they actually talk about mutual respect as the continuance condition. So you want the dialogue to continue. You want the perception of disrespect to go away. But they also talked in here that how about could you continue to respect people you don't respect or you lost respect on just because of a previous conversation you had with them or this conversation we're having now? I'm feeling attacked. I'm feeling disrespected. Mm-hmm. How are you going to continue that? So they recommend, although it's easier to say than getting it done, stay in the dialogue, find a way to honor and regard another person's basic humanity. So look for ways that you guys are similar if you are having this rebuttal against your intentions. And of course, they also added, without excusing others' behavior, we try to sympathize, even empathize with them. So you want to look for those signs, maybe that body language that they are feeling attacked. So you want to kind of move into that person's basic humanity in kind of pulling them away from feeling disrespected and feeling attacked.
It sounds that respect really is the fundamental key ingredient in a meaningful conversation. Going back to what you mentioned, how do you respect the other person, particularly when they've already slighted you or intimidated you in a situation before.
I know. That is so true. And again, this book of Crucial Conversations, I'm so glad I really started reading up more into it, into this. But they say a third step is find mutual respect and purpose. And there's three ways to do this. You apologize when it's appropriate. You want to contrast to fix misunderstanding and create a mutual purpose. There's many different subdivisions about this. So let's start with apologize when appropriate. When you make a mistake, or let's say this conversation that we just started, you can say, I'm sorry if what I mentioned was hurtful, and turn it around to say that the intent is not to cause any pain or undue stress. Own up the mistake if they felt attacked or if they felt disrespected. And because this kind of like you're almost sacrificing your ego to admit mm-hmm. mistakes because you're giving up some of your values. And this, the reward of this apologizing or making apologies is coming back to a healthy dialogue and hopefully better results in the future. Another technique to find mutual respect and purpose is to contrast to fix understanding. Even though you haven't done anything disrespectful or you didn't think that you did something disrespectful, note that although contrasting to fix misunderstanding is not apologizing, it provides context and proportion to the conversation, and it's a tool to use as a prevention or first aid. And how you do this is you say, I don't want to hurt your feelings. I do want to give you some tools to perform efficiently and more effectively. So they call this contrast to fix misunderstanding is kind of like the scripting is, I don't want to dot, dot, dot. And you say that you want to fix something or you want to help them out. Lastly, you create that mutual purpose to prevent prolonging the problem. Mm-hmm. The worst at dialogue, ignore the problem, which prolongs the problem. The good at dialogue, move to a compromise. But the best at dialogue, use skills to create mutual purpose.
So how do you provide feedback?
So providing feedback, I have really used the nursing process in this. You assess, you diagnose, you plan, you implement, and you evaluate. So simple things like, so providing feedback, like as if you're providing feedback to a new hire. Mm-hmm. First, you ask them, what does the new hire do well? You're making an assessment. Next question I use is, what could you do better or what could be done better? You're diagnosing actual, let's say, learning deficits mm-hmm. or potential learning deficits. So you're really diagnosing what else could be improved. The third question I use is, what are the plans for improvement? So in here, you're really planning and identifying outcomes for that new hire because you're creating plans. And then next question is, what's the time frame to achieve this goal? Because now you're looking to implement and providing a timeline for the improvement of this new hire. And then finally, you schedule a meeting to follow up on their progress. Mm-hmm. So now you're evaluating them again. So nursing assessment in full use right here. That's how I typically structure our feedback form for all new hires, techs, and nurses alike.
Mm-hmm. Sounds a lot like the nursing process, as you had mentioned.
Yeah.
So talking about timing or timeline, when is the best time to engage in a crucial conversation? Is it in the moment or a later time, or should it be in a formal setting?
So I would say that all of those are correct, but the situation has to call for it. So I would say that you would do a just-in-time feedback if a patient's safety is on the line. You want to speak up immediately. Mm-hmm. These are one of those near misses or actual errors happen when someone does not speak up. So that's the just-in-time feedback to say, oh, could we do this differently, or let me help you do it this way. So you're assisting them in the moment without necessarily giving them that correction or embarrassing them in front of a patient or embarrassing them in front of the family member. So that's one reason you will do it just in time. And then I would hold it up for a few hours, maybe days, if there's high emotions. Because if I come to you and I'm very upset and you are upset as well and I give you feedback, now we're going to be fighting. We're going to be butting heads. So you want to kind of calm down that heat of the moment and call it out maybe a little later in the day or tomorrow. And you can just say, hey, remember what happened yesterday? Could we talk about it? Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, waiting a few hours to a few days before you talk about it. Now, talking about a structured meeting or a structured feedback where you call in the preceptor, you call in the new hire, and then maybe if there's a need to call in a charge nurse or another person to have this dialogue and understand what is the purpose of this meeting, what is the problem, and follow all the structured questions that I had mentioned earlier.
When do you find it necessary or valuable to engage a mediator in a conversation, in a crucial conversation?
So that's a good question. We've had some situations like this where, again, where there's high emotions, high stakes. So it's one of those higher stakes where employment is on the line, or where someone's reputation is on the line, or maybe it's the third performance improvement plan that you have created for a particular employee. These were our plans when we met at your 60 day. And so far, we are not making any progress. What do you think? How could we support you?
When does it transition from a supportive kind of approach, like facilitating the conversation, to this is becoming more of a performance management issue?
So as an educator, the extent of what I could follow up and evaluate on are really the compliance and then repeated reminders. And then I let the supervisor or the manager in regarding a non-compliance issues. Or once in a while, I'll get these kinds of new hire feedback from a charge or from a peer about, oh yeah, this new hire is not doing well. Well, I always ask them, have you talked to that person? So like that direct conversation with them before escalating it to a charge or to a supervisor or to a manager. So when there's no resolution in those levels, then that's really when we have to escalate a certain situation, a non-compliance issue, poor performance, and continued poor performance, where after so many reminders, there's no progress. So then we either ask that new hire, well, how can we help you and how can we support you? And sometimes there are very rare occasions that someone's performance or speed or maybe their detailedness in a certain task is not really up to speed or does not fit the patient load, patient population in that department, that we may just really ask the person to giving them other options within the organization or maybe in another department where they could be more successful. And of course, you will have to plan that with that new hire. And of course, because based on the implementation that you have established, you may have said, okay, within this 60 days, these are our goals. If these goals are not met, what's our plan B? What's our plan C? So you establish all of those so they know what to expect if they don't meet that expectation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what would you say would be the ownership of those who are giving or making the complaints or the accusations of the other person who is not meeting the standards? What would your recommendation be in supporting their growth as well as leaders in helping develop nurses who are new to their career?
So in my experience, and more recently, really, because they know I work with all the new hires, schedules, orientation, all their follow-ups, they always come to me with these concerns. And then, so I always tell them first or give them back the question. So this is the scenario. Marie, this new hire or this employee, I'm having a hard time finding out what's the problem. I gave them directions to do this, 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 but they did the task on another person. I don't know, is it hard of hearing or is it that they didn't understand what I said or just didn't follow what I had asked them to do? And so I throw the question back at them to say, well, did you tell that person if they heard you well, or did they hear your instructions versus misunderstanding you? And so that's what I always say, is they give me a concern or they give me a complaint, and I throw that back at them to say, did you tell that person? Did you tell that employee? Did you tell that new hire? And a good half of them will say, yes, I did. And they kind of learn that, oh yeah, you have to talk to them before you come to me, kind of fix it first before you want me to fix it. But for those who are new to giving me those concerns, I would always tell them, well, find out first or let them know that this was your concern, and maybe they really misunderstood your instructions. So give it that firsthand feedback before really telling a third person that there's a problem. Fix it first within your capability is what I always tell them.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So thinking about from a proactive approach, right? Because we're talking about two individuals, perhaps three, that are, you know, having issues with performance, communications, etc. Looking at it from a larger perspective, how do you engage a whole team in addressing the culture of being able to free to speak up, safe to speak up, and safe to have those crucial conversations in, integrated in a department's or a team's culture?
It's really hard to coach every single person. I take it one person at a time, and really one person at a time, and with that coaching. That whenever they come to me, I always say these same things as if I'm giving them an evaluation or giving them feedback. I always ask, so what did the new hire do well? What could be better? And did you give them a time frame to do a certain thing so they know exactly what you want out of them? And then that evaluation, is did they meet the expectation? And what did they say about it? How did they perceive it? And again, if they don't know what you know, they will never know that they're in deficit of something because you didn't tell them. So I feel like that is always that challenge. And having a whole department to learn that, I haven't really found a good answer. It's one at a time, one person at a time.
Can you share us your practical advice to other nurse leaders who are listening to this show?
Patience towards the new hire, patience towards the preceptor, respect of the preceptor's time. In one of the projects that we did for our department is establishing like a preceptor pool and finding out what works for them. And I learned from our preceptor group that once in a while, giving them a break from precepting is healthy. It's not that they don't like precepting. They just want that like one day break in precepting. And yes, most residency programs or new hire programs are meant to assign one to two preceptors to one new hire to keep that consistency. But at the same time, respecting the preceptor's capabilities and really their time and giving them an alone time almost with their patients. So respect and patience.
Thank you. Insightful. So Marie, you have an upcoming presentation sometime in the next week or so. Can you share more about that?
Yeah. So this will be in November 16. That's a Tuesday. And this is with the University of Washington Continuing Nursing Education's Immediate Response course. This is one of their virtual classrooms. And I will be presenting two topics, one with a panel with Keandra Rustan and Annie Stedman, and we'll be presenting together information more about crucial conversations. I would be talking about intra-department conversations, and then Keandra and Annie will be talking about inter-department relationships and staff-to-leader conversations. And then also my second topic is on chest pain and recognition of what it could really be.
Very nice. And how can people register for this event?
So online, it's through the UW-CNE Virtual Classroom 2021. It's called Immediate Response. So it's uwcne.org if you are interested to come join us for that virtual classroom. And yeah, you can register there.
Thank you so much. How can our listeners connect with you, Marie?
Yes, you can find me on LinkedIn and you will see me under Marie Yabut.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time. Delighted to have you in the show.
Thank you so much, Miles. Have a good day.
You too. Thank you for listening. To view the complete show notes and all the links mentioned in today's episode, visit milesperillaconsulting.com/podcast. And before you go, make sure you follow or subscribe to this podcast so you can receive the latest episodes as soon as they're released. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. Thank you again for joining me. This is your host, Miles Perilla, and you're listening to The Insightful Nurse Leader. I'll see you next time.